Please take your seats. School is now in session.
Welcome to Homeschooled Podcast.
Homeschooled.
The Homeschooled Podcast. Why? Because he was homeschooled.
It's time to document the journey. Welcome back to Homeschooled Podcast, everybody. We really appreciate you tuning in. As always, I'm glad you guys are back here for this temporary segment that I'm doing right now. I got Rick Ramos with me. I'm glad that you're able to do this with me, bro. as soon as I decided to do this, dude, I was like, I got to have Rick Ramos a part of it. So, I mean, you probably heard, you know, one of my closest friends, Rico, passed away at the end of that. Rico was one of the very few guys that I can talk to about, like, some of those nominated type movies, stuff that really got people talking. I mean, I have a ton of friends that love movies, but they're all like more into the modern stuff or superhero stuff or 80s and, you know, cool stuff that I love too. But Rico and I would really have great conversations about, you know, anything interesting. I'd be like, dude, did you see this yet? You know, stuff like that.
When you talk to movie people, it's on a whole different level. I mean, the people that like movies and they'll go to the AMC and they'll go to the Edwards and they'll do that on a Friday night or a date night or whatever. That's cool and everything. But when you're seeking out the, and that's what the great thing about LA was, the revival houses, the Egyptian, the Beverly, the Arrow. You could see movies from the 40s, the 50s, the 70s. I mean, that's just a wealth. And that's starting to become something that's going across the country, because I'm out here in Phoenix and they're starting to show, they just showed The Godfather and it was a nationwide thing, but we got a theater out here that just showed Unforgiven. They just showed The Thing.
Oh, that's awesome. You know,
and to see them in a big, on a big screen in a theater, that's the way movies are supposed to be seen. And to tell you the truth, it's a waste of time to go see the average film that's playing in a theater. Every once in a while, you get something kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it wows you a little bit. The Nightmare Alley was a lot of fun and it looked beautiful, but I haven't had the chance to go out and actually see like the new Batman film. I want to see it, but you know what? It's not killing me. You know what I mean? It's, you know, remember when we were kids and you were like, I got to go see this.
You couldn't wait.
Yeah, you were either going to cut class and go see the first screening on Friday, or you were going to book it right after school at 2:30 and get there for the 3:15 show. And it was just like, I don't have that anymore.
There wasn't that no spoilers bullshit. It was like, bro, you didn't see it yet. That's your problem. We're talking about it. So you had to like run and be the first one.
I had a friend who, I think he spoiled either Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade or Back to the Future, and it almost came to blows.
I was pissed. I would be too. I would be too. And by the way, not to get off too off topic here, but I know that when you did live here, you lived in Pasadena, right?
Yeah.
Did you go to the IPIC before you left?
I went to the IPIC about three times, and it was a good theater, but they were trying to do too much.
They do a lot.
I saw what they were doing, but it was too much, you know.
Yeah.
People come in and dinner, and I don't want to sit there. I don't. If you're like me, even the noise of my own eating bothers me while I'm watching a movie.
If I'm hooked on something interesting that I'm really into, I even said that to my wife when we went. I'm like, this was cool, but we saw the perfect movie for it. I saw that one, that new Gal Gadot. You know, the one on not the Orient Express, the one on the cruise. Death on the Nile. Death on the Nile.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because what I saw was Murder on the Orient Express. That's what I saw.
At the IPIC? That's hilarious. That was a perfect movie, because there were some dull moments and and I didn't really have that much invested. I like those movies, but honestly, Orient Express was better. And, it was a great experience. But yes, if it was a movie I was super into, it would be a little distracting. They're coming around too much and talking to you. They call them ninja servers. I don't know what kind of ninjas those are. They're just straight up like, yo, you good down there? You need another water?
Exactly. Like, you're taking me away from what I already risk killing four or five people during a screening as it is.
Yes.
I really don't need a waiter or a waitress coming in there and screwing that up. So I can't deal with it.
We had fun though. I would do it again, but again, like a fun movie that I didn't really mind. Just something fun.
If there's no investment, then it's just like, it's a good time. That's it. That's all it needs to be.
But yeah, so getting back to, so I started in 1973 because that was the year Rico was born, and so we're just doing this Oscar season because he's not around for me to talk about. We would probably make fun of how terrible this year is going to be.
Sure.
But
I mean, last year was horrible. I mean, this year, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. This last 2 years are the first years that I've never seen, that I haven't seen anything that was up for, that was nominated. Nothing.
There's not much to see this year, man. There's really not. I've seen a lot of it, to be honest with you. And nothing has been like a wow factor. Nothing has been like, that's my favorite movie of the year. So, I'll tell you this. My favorite movie of the year of 2021 is not nominated for a single thing, which is Small Engine Repair. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I haven't seen it.
It's John Bernthal, I would say, is probably the most famous name in it. But the leading guy is also the director. I forget his name, but it's just great. It starts off a little slow, your typical like Boston drama.
Yeah.
But then where is this going? But it's intriguing the whole time, so you don't mind. But then it takes it's just crazy towards the end, dude. And it's not long.
I like a movie like that. I like a movie that takes its time, that isn't rushed.
Yes.
That, you know, like a 70s style film that isn't afraid to be about something. It doesn't feel like, oh, we got to get the kids in here. We got to appeal to.
It takes its time. Like, you don't know what's going on yet, but the dialogue is like, you know, like a Tarantino film. There could be nothing going on and you still can't take your eyes off the screen because of dialogue. So that was really good. And so far, you and I are going to be starting at 1983. That's where I left off.
83.
The 80s are not great, dude. They're great.
And every time I just, because if you're talking to Steve Simone.
Yeah.
80s.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there like, it's the worst decade. It's the worst decade of, I mean, there were some great films that came out.
Yes.
But all it was the battle between Stallone and Schwarzenegger and John Hughes. That's all. And they were fun films.
Yeah.
They're films that stick with our generation. But these are not films that I go back to and I say, oh my God, that was groundbreaking, or that's something that has stayed with me. Not the 80s doesn't really do it. So
I've been saying that the last two episodes, that for Oscars, it's not a good decade, but for fun movies, it was great. You got your Indiana Jones, Back to the Futures, you know, Steven Spielberg is at his peak. Robert Zemeckis is finally getting recognized. You know what I mean? So it's fun. Yeah. It's fun.
Decade of movies. And there's a handful of really great things that came out, but it doesn't compare to the 70s, and it doesn't even ready you for what the 90s would be. So it's a weird decade.
So to recap the last episode, just to fill people in of where I went, I watched a couple of things that I wanted to watch that we talked about that I had never seen before. I'll tell you what, I tried Annie Hall and I turned it off, to be honest with
really?
You. Yeah, he's a little annoying for me. Woody Allen is a little, like he's like a comic who's trying to try a bit on you constantly.
Yeah.
And the whole time it's like he's doing material, not funny lines, but material. Yeah. It was bothering me that his actors opposite him are allowing him to get that much time to get that long of a punchline out just to try to sneak in it. It was irritating me. I just turned it off.
I've never been a big fan of Woody Allen. I like some of the stuff that he does. I don't like everything. I don't particularly care for him as an actor. And he kind of annoys me in some of his films. But I like some of the ideas that are there. But the ideas that he does, that whole Jewish, upper class kind of neurotic, you know who does that beautifully and so much better? Albert Brooks.
Yeah.
If you watch Defending Your Life, Mother, and Lost in America, you'll see Woody Allen being done so much better than Woody Allen. The same angst, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just skip. But Woody Allen, when you make a film a year, you're going to make some bad ones. Now, I don't hate Annie Hall. But I don't think it's the great masterpiece that a lot of people have made.
It won like everything that year.
Oh, yeah. It was best actress, best screenplay, best picture, director, best picture. Yeah. It swept. It was unbelievable.
Crazy. Yeah. Just crazy. And then the one thing I watched from the last episode that I liked was What was that one that I texted you? The Goodbye Girl.
Goodbye Girl with Marsha Mason and Dreyfuss.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I actually enjoyed it a lot. And I would, my only complaint is the way it ends. I feel like movies back then sometimes didn't know how to end. You know, it's like, really? That's how it ends?
It just kind of drifts off. It's nothing conclusive, you know? Dreyfuss was a weird actor at that period because he's very schluppy and he doesn't look like somebody that would really grab a hold of an audience, but he's always been really good. He's always been reliable and solid. And his whole career is due to basically Jaws and how good he is in Cooper in that. So
he's great in that. He does grab a hold of me. I don't picture him as like the lead in a romance of wooing this beautiful woman, you know, but it just works. It just works.
It does.
So before we get into 1983, really quick, I want to let everybody know, if you're listening to this right now, I am in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. I think that's the order of the way you're supposed to say it. Edmonton and Alberta, Canada. I'm literally getting on a plane tomorrow. So if you're listening to this, I'm already there. I got shows Thursday through Sunday at Rick Bronson's the comic strip that's in the mall, the West Edmonton Mall that you guys got there. I can't wait. You can get tickets at my website, homeschooledpod.com. Click on tour. And for now, that's all I got. I got some more dates in May. I said I was going to keep March and April open in case the comedy club reached out to me. But besides that, I'm working on my other projects, and the comedy club did reach out to me. So I'm going to be in Edmonton. And then besides that, I got Paso Robles May 21st, and then St. George, Utah, May 28th. I'm filming my special in Paso Robles May 21st, so come on out to that one. So I'm just staying local as much as I possibly can and try to work out the material for that. But besides that, that's all I got. And let's get into it, dude. 1983. Let's do it.
1983.
Here's what's nominated in 1983. Gandhi. I like that you laughed already. Yeah. Actually, E.T.
Mm-hmm.
Missing. Tootsie.
Yeah.
And The Verdict. Now, I got to tell you, out of all of these, I've only seen E.T.
I've seen Missing, E.T., The Verdict, Parts of Gandhi, and what was the other one?
Tootsie.
Tootsie, masterpiece.
Tootsie's a masterpiece?
Tootsie is incredible. Tootsie's great. But of those two films, E.T. is just the one that sticks in your mind. It's part of our childhood. I have to sit down and watch it again because I remember loving it then. And then you go through that film student hatred of Spielberg for about, you know, a couple of years, that you don't want to give him the credit that he's due, but he, you know, he really is a hell of a lot better than I was willing to accept. But Tootsie as an overall statement of that time is the best film of that decade. When it comes to a performance, it's Paul Newman in The Verdict. If you've never seen that, oh my God, it's an unbelievable performance from Paul Newman, because he has that. Paul Newman was always a very rugged, attractive, handsome guy in these films, from HUD through, you know, up all these 50s and 60s films that he was really being pushed as this male, I don't know what to call it, but in The Verdict, he's a beaten down, ambulance chasing, alcoholic lawyer.
Really?
Who's given one last shot. And it's incredible. The performance is great because it's a guy who knows that he's pissed away every opportunity that he has, that he's been given. Every opportunity he has been given, it's he has this chance at a case that has real merit, and he's going to be taking on an insurance company. And he just puts so much into it. And I think Jack Warden is in that film. I'm pretty sure Jack Warden is in that film. I mean, that's a period when Jack Warden was showing up in all of these supporting roles. He was a judge in the Al Pacino movie, You're Out of Order, I'm Out of Order, all Injustice for All.
Injustice for All, yeah.
He played the Fuchs brothers in Used Cars, which is one of the great performances of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just phenomenal.
I know who you're talking about now.
Yeah, he might be in that. I think he might be a private investigator in that film. I can't remember. I haven't seen it in a long time. But it is really, you want to talk about a forgotten director, a director that got the respect, but doesn't sit there on the Mount Rushmore of directors like Scorsese and Spielberg. Sidney Lumet was a phenomenal director, and that's the verdict, right? Sidney Lumet. Yeah. So we're talking Sidney Lumet for the verdict. We're talking Sidney Pollack for Tootsie. Yeah. Sir Richard Attenborough for Gandhi. Spielberg for E.T. There was only four films. That's so crazy because
five. The Missing.
What's the Missing?
Missing.
Costa Gravis, right?
It wasn't nominated for Best Director, so I don't know.
Okay, so that's I think that's Jack Lemmon and Sissy Spacek, where it's about the turmoil in Chile. I think it's Argentina or Chile. I can't remember during the Pinochet regime. So, you know, I don't give a shit. Jack Lemmon, you can put Jack Lemmon in damn near anything, and I'm going to watch it.
This is the first year in the last like several that I went through that he wasn't nominated.
I mean, he was
actually. I take it back. He was nominated for Missing.
Yeah, great. And he plays a father who's I think his kid is a journalist. It's been years since I've seen this film, but I remember being a kid and thinking to myself, this guy has a sense of the everyman that I think a lot of actors are trying to go for, but can't really achieve. Jack Lemmon is that guy. He's that guy you want to know. You want to just, you feel comfortable around him. You feel good. He puts your mind at ease. He's just such a goddamn good actor.
I've always loved Jack Lemmon.
Always wonderful.
Let's see what else here. Do you know which one won out of these?
Gandhi.
Yeah, it was Gandhi.
Yeah, Gandhi, I think.
Yeah, it was Gandhi. So another thing I always like to bring to attention when I'm doing this is I often think the Oscars don't get it right. And then I think usually something that wins, or especially today, not always, but especially the last several decades, it's been the winners are stuff that you would never watch again. It's stuff that like, okay, that was interesting. I learned a little bit about that topic. The performances were pretty good, but I have no interest to watch it ever again.
Yeah.
But then there's movies that you'll watch for the rest of your life, and those are the ones that never win. In this case, it's E.T. obviously doesn't win, but that's the one that you're watching all the time. That's the one that like you're showing your kids.
That's the one that you want to show your kids. That's the one that you want to share, and you hope. You hope against hopes that your kid's going to be able to connect with it the way you did, because it's such a... I mean, when E.T., the whole up and down that alien goes through in that movie, I remember being a kid. I was 6, 9 years old, and you're tearing up. You feel for it. And Spielberg was a master. Whether you want to call it a manipulator of the audience or just a great storyteller, Steven Spielberg was able to create tension and excitement like no other director has ever been, like no other American director has ever been able to accomplish in the history of cinema. And he knew what he could do. So if you look at those family films, Jaws, Close Encounters, The Raiders, the Indiana Jones series, then into Jurassic Park. This is a guy who understood the pulse of America, the pulse of the American family. There's a real good documentary on Spielberg on HBO, and I think it's still playing right now, where they talk about his entire career. They talk to his family, his father, his mother, and you see how much of his personality goes into these films in his depiction of the nuclear family and how it breaks apart and how it has to come back together.
That's interesting.
It's a really well-made documentary. It's a little bit too much of a boost to him. It's not
sure.
You know what I mean? That kind of thing, but it is great insight. And it's great to hear him talk and his parents talk and see where a lot of these images and these emotions spring out of. So I recommend that if you get a chance.
Oh, that's definitely something I would watch. Yeah. So that year, Ben Kingsley wins Best Actor for Gandhi. Best Director goes to Gandhi.
Richard Attenborough.
Yes. Best Actress is Meryl Streep for Sophie's Choice. And so that's all I've got on 1983. Yeah. But honestly, the ones that stand out to me of things I'm going to make sure I watch is Tootsie and The Verdict. Yeah. Which are two things
Tootsie's
I've never seen.
Tootsie's really interesting because it's the tension is there. And what's great about it is if you know the backstory of the film, Sidney Pollack, the director, appears in it as Hoffman's agent. And supposedly there was such turmoil between Hoffman and Pollack because especially at that period in his career, Hoffman was a nightmare to work with because he was such a perfectionist, because he would argue every single point. And Pollack was a great director who would end up going toe-to-toe with him on just about every decision. And if you've never seen the film, it has a great supporting cast, including Terry Garr as the jilted girlfriend, playing up the whole insecure blonde New York actress girlfriend and not doing it as a stereotype. Jessica Lange, wonderful and as beautiful as she's ever been in a film and very heartfelt. Dabney Coleman as a scumbag TV director. But the real hit, you've never seen it and you don't know who's in it?
No.
Okay, I'm not going to tell you who's in it because it was a complete surprise. And they didn't put his name up on the titles. He just shows up and it's a major part. And it's great.
Really? It's just random?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm excited.
Wait, is that
Tootsie you're talking about?
Tootsie, yeah.
Okay.
But when you turn it on and you see him, you're like, oh my God. You have to go through the shock of it being this actor. And then when you realize it and you see the part, you're like, that's perfect. That's perfect casting. They couldn't have found somebody better to play this role, and he kills it.
Okay, now I'm excited. Yeah. 1984. Here's what's nominated. You got you got The Big Chill, The Dresser, The Right Stuff, Terms of Endearment, and Tender Mercies.
Duvall won for Tender Mercies in a well deserved. I don't know who he was up against that year, but
he was. He's up against Michael Caine for Educating Rita, Tom Conti for Rubin, Tom Courtenay, is that how you say it, for The Dresser, and Albert Finney for The Dresser.
The Dresser is a great film. The Dresser is about a Shakespearean actor, Albert Finney, and The Dresser is not slang, but the term in the theater where a big name actor, an Olivier, a Ralph Richardson, a Gielgud, this would be their manservant, basically.
Oh, okay.
And be the one that dresses them, irons their clothes, gets them ready, but also pushes them out on stage when they're too drunk to perform or when they're dealing with all that actor diva shit that is keeping them from. And Courtney's wonderful in it. And Albert Finney is one of the great actors of the cinema. And he's an actor that a lot of people won't know, but once you see him, you're like, oh, I know that guy. That's Miller's Crossing.
Oh, yeah,
and Miller's Crossing, one of the great Tommy Gunn scenes ever shot on film. He's the Irish mob boss. But he's the actor in that film. Wonderful, wonderful performance, but a very subdued film that you're not going to get a lot of. It's not a lot of wham bam. It's not a lot of. There's no explosions. It's just two people and the relationship that exists between them in the theater, and it's beautifully told. It's beautifully
done. Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's one I got to check out. And so yeah, you're right. Robert Duvall won for Tender Mercies.
Have you seen that?
No, I've never seen any of these from 1984.
Duvall is he's great. He's a country western singer, down on his luck, coming back, but he's got that Duvall charm, and that Duvall charm is just, you know, all those years that I spent following De Niro and worshiping De Niro, I feel kind of like I wasted because I should have been following Duvall. Duvall was really the one that I should have been paying attention to. Just an incredible actor. Incredible.
But you like the movie?
I think it's a great movie. It's him. Wilford Brimley is great in it. Ellen Barkin has one of her earliest roles. Tess Harper, I think is her name. The love interest. It's a great film.
Okay.
Very underseen, underrated Australian director, Bruce Beresford, who did, I think he would go on to do Driving Miss Daisy.
You want to guess who won, or you know who won?
For what?
For Best Picture.
Best Picture? Give me the names again.
The Big Chill, The Dresser, The Right Stuff, Terms of Endearment, Tender Mercies.
Terms of Endearment.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never seen that either.
Terms of Endearment, you can't lose. You got Shirley MacLaine, you got Deborah Winger, both of them powerhouses. You got James L. Brooks directing, and it's a mother-daughter love story where the daughter is dying of cancer. So it's basically designed for the awards. I think Deborah Winger and Shirley MacLaine were both nominated and might have canceled each other out that year. Can't remember. Did one of them win it?
Shirley MacLaine won.
Shirley MacLaine won,
And Deborah Winger was also nominated, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's surprising that they didn't cancel each other out. I mean, good performances. Jeff Daniels, Danny DeVito shows up in that. Jack Nicholson kills it as an ex-astronaut.
Jack Nicholson wins.
Yeah, best supporting actor. He was great in it. He's really a lot of fun. But he has that Jack thing where he can just walk through it and just be cocky and just capture you, just grab a hold of you and make you. I feel sorry for anybody who's on screen with Jack Nicholson because they're not going to be watching you, you know? You're going to be watching that crazy bastard.
You know what I just saw? This was one of the ones from the first episode I did that I went back and watched, and it was one of the few that I stood out to me. Mm-hmm. It was with Jack Nicholson, and it's called The Last Detail.
Oh, incredible film.
I really liked it. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Cursing Up a Storm, Randy Quaid of the Oath. Yeah, I love that.
Cousin Ed from Vacation is the kid.
So random. Carol Kane as a hooker, as young as she. Yeah, it's just great. You know, Richard Linklater, about 25 or 30 years later, made a quasi-sequel to that.
Yes, okay.
Basically the same characters out.
So Last it's the Flag same Flying, Last Flag Flying. It's the same author that wrote the original one. So, they're saying it's an unofficial sequel. It's loosely the same characters, but it's with Steve Carell and Bryan Cranston and Lawrence Fishburne.
And it's good. It's a good film. It's not as good as The Last Detail.
No, but it's not. It was good. I saw it. I had no idea that they were related until I read about it later. But it makes sense. Apparently, Steve Carell is Cousin Eddie, or supposed to be at least. Really, really interesting. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
A lot of fun. Good movie.
Yeah.
Really good movie.
So we're getting into 1985 now. By the way, that was just a Terms of Endearment year. The best director also went to James L. Brooks.
I mean, it was the kind of film that it's a no-brainer, and it's a good film. It's a sweet film. If you want to sit with your, you know, every once in a while I'll throw it on with my mom and she'll start crying, and you know it's one of those good cries where you feel good but you feel like you start looking at life, man, and it makes you think, but it does it. Deborah Winger and Shirley MacLaine are so goddamn good in it that whatever faults that you have with it, with the obviousness of the material, they make it work. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's enough. I don't know if it's Best Picture. Of that list, I would have given it to, I might have given it to The Right Stuff. The Right Stuff is, but that's a man's movie. That's one of those things where it's like, Fred Ward, Ed Harris, Sam Shepard, all these guys. And, you know, it's that American drive to be the first in space. And, I mean, it's so well done. I think it's Philip Kaufman who just, great film. It's a great film. But it's also, like a 3 hour long film. That's not for everybody, you know.
Yep.
It's difficult. That's a difficult watch for a lot of people.
Headed into 1985, I also don't know a lot of these. Bro, 1985, okay. I wasn't even born yet, but once I was, I'm going back and I'm watching Back to the Future, all right? That's what I'm watching in 1985.
Every time.
So here's what was nominated in 85. You've got A Soldier Story, Places in the Heart, A Passage to India, The Killing Fields, and
Amadeus.
Amadeus, sorry.
Amadeus,
Can you tell? I don't know what any of these are.
Yeah.
I've
seen most of those films. I saw Soldier Story when I was a kid. That was an interest. That's Howard Brooks, I think his name was. He was a black actor. He was on a show called In the Heat of the Night with Carol O'Connor.
Oh, man, I know that show. Yes.
He was much younger, much thinner. I know Robert Townsend was in that. I think Denzel Washington might have been that in a small supporting role. But it was like one of the first films that – it was one of those rare films that focused on a black story. It was directed by Norman Jewison. I can't say – I remember being impressed when it went up. Being impressed by it when I was a kid, catching it on cable at some point. It was really well done. You know, just the racism experienced by black soldiers in World War, I think it was World War II, the army in the World War II. So it's a good movie. If I remember correctly, it's a very good movie.
So Amadeus wins.
Yeah, Amadeus is woof. It's that Polish director. Oh my God. He just passed away a couple of years ago.
Milos Forman.
Yeah. Milos Forman did Cuckoo's Nest.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
Cuckoo's Nest. He did Cuckoo's Nest, Amadeus, and then he would go on to do Man in the Moon, the Jim Carrey, Andy Kaufman documentary, biofilm.
Gosh, I never would have guessed those three were the same director.
I mean, very interesting guy because he's a guy that grew up in he wasn't Polish, he was Czechoslovakian. That's right. He was Czechoslovakian growing up under communist control, and he was an expatriate come to America. And Amadeus is this crazy, if you're familiar with Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, the composer, very young, but incredibly talented, but undisciplined in every sense of the word. But the story is told through the eyes of another composer of much less talent called Salieri by F. Murray Abraham, who would win the best actor that year.
Yeah, yeah.
For this performance. And watching the film, it's not one of those things that it's a movie for people that really love movies. You're not going to watch that movie and be like, you're not going to be sitting down there with the wife and say, oh, let's watch this, you know. But for people who really like movies and really dig it, you're really knocked out by F. Murray Abraham's performance.
Yeah.
And Tom Hulce is wonderful as Mozart. And it's just beautifully done, and the music is great, but it's really the conflict of somebody who wishes he was as talented as this other person. And F. Murray Abraham gives an incredible performance. It's a great performance on his part.
I mean, another sweep: best picture, best actor, best director,
best screenplay, all that stuff. Yeah.
Best actress went to Sally Field that year for The Places in the Heart, which is not
Her. That's her. She's losing. She's a woman raising her family. Her husband is dead, I think. I think that's Malkovich is in that as a farmhand, and Danny Glover is in it as well. But Sally Field was doing some really great stuff at that point in the 80s because nobody had really thought anything about her. They figured she did a show where she was a surfer girl and she had played the flying nun, so she was pretty much a joke. But then she started doing Places in the Heart and a little bit more heavier films. She had good box office with Burt Reynolds in Hooper, The End, and of course Smokey and the Bandit, the first two films. So she had really established herself as somebody. And it was with this film and Norma Rae where she really upped the game and people really started taking her seriously as a really talented dramatic actress.
Which was a couple of years before this, wasn't it, Norma Rae?
Yeah, Norma Rae. Yeah, I think so. But I think Places in the Heart was the infamous "You like me, you really like me" speech that they mocked her for decades. So, yeah. That's how they are.
I've always liked her. So
always good. Always good.
Yeah, she's always good. 1986. Yeah. We've got The Color Purple.
Mm-hmm.
Out of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Kiss of the Spider Woman.
Yeah.
Witness.
Uh-huh.
And Prizzi's Honor.
Prizzi's Honor, yeah. Prizzi's Honor was, I think it's like the second to last film that John Huston did. It was, it's a mafia comedy with Kathleen Turner and Jack Nicholson with Angelica Huston. Angelica Huston would win Best Supporting Actress. So her career would really explode after that, because before that, she was just considered Huston's daughter and a model mostly. So she wasn't really taken seriously. But Prizzi's Honor is it's not a film that I really loved when I saw it in theaters, because I saw it about 6 years ago at the Arrow Theater. It was good, but I couldn't really get into it. That's the year that's infamous for The Color Purple being shut out of, I think it's the most nominations with the most losses of any film. Best Actress.
The Color Purple?
Yeah. Best Film, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Best Screenplay adapted from something else. I think it was nominated for nine or 10. And it went away with nothing. And the NAACP was up in arms. And everybody, you know, and then there was some backlash with Spielberg directing because of his, you know, his obvious difference in the subject matter. But it was a different time. I mean, it's a damn good film, and it really holds up well. And it's Whoopi Goldberg. That was her first film. That was her being discovered and coming out and doing, and her career would go into the stratosphere. But it's the really frightening thing is Danny Glover, how evil he is in that film as this man that abuses her over 40 years or so.
Oh, damn.
And it's a brutal film. It's a rough film.
Yeah.
But
yeah, of course.
But for them to give it to Out of Africa, it was a fucking travesty, because I don't know anybody who's ever seen it, including me.
You've never seen Out of Africa?
I've never seen it.
I've never seen it either. I've at least heard of it, but I've also heard of The Color Purple, and I would have, if I had a guess, I would have guessed that that's what won. But yeah, you're right. It didn't win anything.
No. It was Out of Africa. It was Sidney Pollack.
Yep.
I think he might have won Best Director for that. I don't know.
Any particular reason why you avoided it?
I was never a big fan of Robert Redford.
He did win Best Director.
Pollack won it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There were certain films that they just didn't appeal to me, you know, and that's kind of like, I know it's not one of those English drawing room films, but that's what it reminded me of. Something that just the English in Africa or early Americans in Africa colonized.
Redford not even nominated.
Redford very rarely got nominated. He was too good looking. Redford was never, he was never the critic's darling.
I mean, a couple of the ones I went through in the past, he did get nominated. I forget what they were for, but yeah, how is he not Brad Pitt's father? Can we have the fucking DNA test already?
Exactly, you know, that kind of beauty. They did a movie together. Did they do a movie together?
They did do a movie together. Yeah. I think I looked it up when I was Googling, are they related? Which, of course, it says they're not, but I still don't believe it. Yeah. Sometimes I think that famous actors are related to famous actors and they hide it. They don't want us to know for some reason.
Would make sense.
You know, like I think I'm convinced Leonardo DiCaprio is the son of Jack Nicholson.
Would make sense. I'd buy that.
If you ever look at Leonardo DiCaprio when he's doing his little villain eyebrows. Yeah. It's like, you know, and then they're both front row all the time at the Laker game. It's like, come on, that's a father son right there.
It makes sense to me. I'm sold.
Yeah, think about when they were both young, extremely, you know, good looking, charming dudes, talented dudes.
Leonardo DiCaprio better start taking care of himself, because he doesn't want to look like Jack. But that's the beauty of Jack. Jack doesn't care. Jack is old and fat.
Yeah,
and doesn't care.
He's still great. He's like, well, he's the best. I'll play this then, yeah. And he'll still nail it. So I'll tell you what was nominated for Best Actor that year. William Hurt won for The Kiss mm-hmm. of the Spider Woman.
Kiss of the Spider Woman. Yeah.
Harrison Ford is nominated that year.
2 years ago, it was a difficult film. It's not like a regular film. It's shot mostly like a play because it was originally a play, and it's about prisoners in a South American prison and certain levels of homosexuality. I think he plays a gay prisoner.
It explains why he won.
Yeah, that's
that's the Oscars. That's like their go-to.
They love women. They love women as hookers or dying, yeah. And men as homosexuals, and it's something that they.
By the way, going back to the last detail, and you're talking about what's her name plays the hooker,
Carol Gain.
I got a hilarious kick out of that because if you want to go Google it and look at the mm-hmm. cast and how they list her on there is mm-hmm. whore. They say she plays whore.
Whore.
Why not say the hooker?
That's the look at the 70s. It was a brutal, brutal time. I mean.
IMDb, racism, misogyny, whore.
Yeah, whore. Whore number one. Whore
yeah, yeah, three. Yeah. So, Harrison Ford's nominated for The Witness, James Garner for Murphy's Romance, and Jack mm-hmm. Nicholson, of course, for Prissy's Honor, and then John Voight for Runaway Train.
Mm-hmm. Runaway Train was good, but if I were to give it to anybody of that group, it would really come down to Harrison Ford or James Garner. And Ford, because Witness is a great film. Witness is Peter Weir's. Harrison Ford is a Philadelphia cop, and a little kid, Lucas Haas, he witnesses somebody murdered in a bathroom, and it turns out to be a cop killing. A cop set it up, and he's an Amish boy. And Harrison Ford has to protect him and his mother, and Harrison Ford has to go undercover in the Amish community. So it's the kind of thing that you could see it being played for laughs, but it's deadly serious. Mm. It's so well done, and it's a beautiful little story.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, James Garner in Murphy's Romance, he's just cool as shit. He's just one of these guys where you're like, as I get older, I want to be as cool as him. Garner had a... I don't know if you grew up. You're a little bit too young to remember the Rockford Files, but
I know what it is. Yeah.
You know the show.
Yeah,
he was one of the great TV detectives. Just cool, hanging out. Never wanted to fight. Always getting his ass kicked. But you know, he was just one of the bad, one of those cool, tough guys that just made it through the system.
And by the way, you're right. Supporting actress, you got two Color Purples. You got
Oprah and Shug.
Margaret Avery.
Margaret Avery as Shug, yeah.
And then Oprah Winfrey. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them won.
Nobody. See, they boxed them out.
Oh, Meryl Streep's in Out of Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she was nominated that year for that too.
She didn't win though.
It's hard to imagine a year when, and I take nothing away from Meryl Streep. I think she's one of the great, I think she's top three actors of all time, of cinema. She's incredible. And every year that she's in something, there's a good chance that she's going to be nominated.
The winner that year was Geraldine Page for the
Trip to Bountiful.
Yeah, the Trip to Bountiful, yeah. So that's it, dude. We got through all the way to 1986, and so something I do before I end the show is I ask you what year you were born, and let's see what was nominated that year, and you pick.
1974. That was Taxi Driver.
Oh man,
that was Rocky.
No, Rocky is 77.
Rocky 77.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I just did that one. So 1974.
Rocky was 74. Okay, so Taxi Driver definitely 74. What else?
So what do you do? So if you were born in 74, that means 1975 is your Oscars, technically. So would you want to know 75 or do you want to know 74?
So I think it's more important the films of 74 in 75.
So you want to know the 75?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you that. I've already done that year, so I think I probably threw that paper away. So Earthquake.
Ugh. Bad. Real bad.
Hold on. Let me see if I can find this. So, where's the best picture at? I'll get there. I put it way down here. Oh, I mean, yeah, not a bad year. You got not Earthquake. The Towering Inferno.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lenny.
Yeah.
The Conversation.
Great film.
Chinatown.
Great film.
Godfather Part 2.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Godfather 1, of course.
Yeah. Classic.
I mean, for me, I would go with The Godfather. I recently watched Lenny. Loved it. I recently watched Chinatown. I liked it a lot. Again, I felt they don't know how to end movies.
I like how bleak that one ends. I like how dark it. I'm like,
it does. But yeah, that's how it ends. Just dark,
horrible.
Fucking Polanski, right?
They get away with it. I'm like, damn. That's
yeah. But then I was. That's what I said. But then I was like, well, that probably actually really happened. So that's. Yeah. It's probably.
I love that.
The Conversation is on my list. I haven't seen it yet.
Conversation is a. That's one of those films that, you know what? Sit down in a dark room, pour yourself a tall one, and then just sit there and absorb it, because it's Coppola knocked it out of the park. I think 3 years running. I mean, it was Godfather, Godfather 2, The Conversation, and Apocalypse. And he had a run in the 1970s that would never be equaled again, even by him. I mean, it was his career went right into the shitter right after that. But The Conversation is really the most understated of all those four films. It's the most low key, and Gene Hackman is brilliant in it. Okay. Wonderful. And I'm a big Gene Hackman fan, though, so that's...
Yeah, I love him, too. Yeah, it's on my list. I just haven't had a chance to get to that one yet. But, yeah, it's definitely up there. So, out of these, if somebody says, what's your birthday movie, Oscar-wise, which one are you going with?
I would go with Godfather 2.
Yeah, that's what I would do, too.
It's just one of the greatest films ever made. I mean, you can't take anything away from that film. That film... hits on every, it says something, it's beautiful cinema, it's an incredible film, but it also says a hell of a lot about America and who we are as a people and as a country. And a lot of that isn't pretty, a lot of that isn't good, but it's still America.
Yeah.
And I don't know of a film that captures that diversity and that struggle in the same way that film does. And to see Al Pacino make that complete turn from the first film and to become as ruthless as he does, and his interaction with his brother, I mean, it's just, it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's an incredible film.
I mean, honestly, the Godfathers are still like, you know, a little unbeatable for me.
Yeah. It's just, you just can't great. Compare. Mm-hmm. There's never been a series like that in movies, and it makes me sad that Coppola just went to hell after that.
That's crazy.
But you got to be thankful that he got those four films made.
Speaking of which, what do you think of American Graffiti?
I've never seen it.
Oh, really? It's on my list too. I just found it at a used DVD store the other day.
Yeah, it's from what I've seen of it, the clips. I mean, phenomenal cast. I mean, everybody's in it. Dreyfuss, Harrison Ford, you know, Ron Howard, everybody's in it. I don't know why I've never made time to see it. You know, it's the weirdest things, certain films that you would think you would have seen, you think you would have made time to see, and it just slipped through the cracks, and that's one of them. I forgot to see it.
Well, if you ever watch it, let me know what you think, because I'm about to watch it pretty soon.
I'll let you know.
I'll ship you the DVD when I'm done.
I look forward to the mail. It's Arizona, so get it before the summer comes, okay?
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Actually, we'll be folded up like a taco if you get it back to the
hotel. Yeah, you're better off just ordering it, downloading it or something. All right, Rick, it was great to see you, man. Thanks so much for good doing this. You, that was great talking with some of these
kill
with
on
you.
Those shows. Have a great time. Break a leg. And,
thank you.
my best for the upcoming special. All right.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate it. I love talking about these movies, but this decade is a little rough for me because I haven't seen a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you were here because you've seen 99% of them, and I'm going to take your recommendations and I'm adding them to my list, and I'm excited to go watch some of those.
Tell me what you think.
Absolutely, I will. All right, bro. Reach out anytime. Keep in touch.
Take care, boss.
All right, bro. Be good. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye. Rick Ramos, everybody, that guy's awesome. I mean, the guy's just an encyclopedia on these movies. I thought I was going to stump him on one of these. Like, ain't no way he's seen all these. Yeah, he's heard of every single one. He didn't see two of them, like, at a choice. Freaking crazy. He's got his own podcast. I believe it's called Watch This with Rick Ramos. Make sure you go check that out. Yeah, like I said, just an encyclopedia on movies. And he was one of the guys I was hoping to get on this, and especially for this decade, because I was like lost. I didn't see a lot of this stuff. And I probably, if he wasn't on, I probably would have overlooked a lot of this stuff too. So some of that stuff sounded great. Like, I'm excited to go watch Tootsie and The Verdict. And I still got to go back and watch American Graffiti. I'm excited to try those. So I hope you guys are enjoying these episodes. We're shedding the spotlight, pun intended, over on the Oscars a little bit, going back and seeing the phenomenal films that they have snubbed or when do they get it right. And, you know, the real Oscars is a couple weeks away. I don't know if anybody gives a shit. There's not a lot of movies to brag about. I've seen a couple. I've seen a lot of them so far. And a couple of them are fine. Nothing that has really blown me away yet. But, hey, we'll see. I'm still searching. And that's it, everybody. I hope I see you this weekend in Edmonton. Come on out. Please come up and say hi. It's my first time in Edmonton, and I don't know when I'll be able to get over there again. So it's a rare opportunity to see me perform live. I've got a phenomenal hour that I'm working on right now. So it's coming through to your town, and it's going to be great. I really appreciate you guys. And make sure you guys say hi. Give me a suggestion on some of these movies that we're talking about. Call me crazy if I haven't seen something that you love, or you got to suggest something for me. Make sure you guys are following me on Instagram, because you can comment, you can send me a message. I get back to those, and I release videos on there of like short 5-minute videos of talking about reviewing movies, whether they be old or new, and followed by a movie trivia. So it's a lot of fun. Everything's at Augustino Zoida. You can buy tickets to see me live at AugustinoComedian.com, AugustinoComedian.com, or just go to HomeschooledPod.com. Once again, that's HomeschooledPod.com. And I'll see you guys in about a week when I get back into town. We'll do another podcast. We'll talk movies. We'll talk shit. We'll talk comedy. And I love you guys. Thank you so much. Please hit subscribe. Please keep coming back here to Homeschool Podcast, where we document the journey. And don't forget that only love can save the world. I'm Augustino Zoida. This is Homeschooled Podcast. Peace. Homeschool Podcast. Homeschool.
The Homeschool Podcast. Why? Because it was homeschooled.
I don't want to do that.
No, okay.
I don't want to do that at all.